Welcome to What Are You Sporting About Podcast, a podcast about business, employment, sports, and entertainment to help educate, support, and guide you to your next level. Here's your host, attorney Savania DeBarros.
Hello, hello. I'm Attorney DeBarros, protector of athletes, and it is amazing to be here again to bring another episode of the What Are You Sporting About podcast to you guys. As you already know, I am the protector of athletes and the founding and principal attorney for you. And so I have Miss, or should I say Dr. Collins, let me get that right, Dr. Janice Collins, who's coming on today. She's a national and international award-winning trifecta force with 35 years of experience as a global journalist. She has 18 years of teaching experience on the collegiate level and college, and for college athletes. So she was the first female Little League player in the history of the state of Kentucky and was a standout athlete at Wake Forest University as the first ever all ACC honoree at Wake, and was inducted as an ACC Hall of Fame legend in 2015. She understands what it is to be a top flight student athlete, and her firsthand experience, as well as her experience as a professor and student athlete and media expert, allows her to speak the language of the student athlete, academic advisors, NIL media management, and coaches. So without further ado, I want to welcome Dr. Janice Collins.
Hello. Hi. Hello. So nice to meet you.
You as well. And thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I want to start off by asking you, what are you sporting about?
What am I sporting about? I'm sporting about the well-being, the emotional, physical, spiritual well-being of all student athletes. And of athletes themselves, especially the ones on the margins.
I love it. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about you. Give us the backstory of how you've gotten to where you are now, because I do know that you are also an author. Your intro also, we talked about having multiple awards, national and international. So tell us a little bit more about what have brought you to that space and have allowed you to reach really a ton of success that a lot of people would hope that they can achieve in a lifetime.
Oh, well, thank you. First of all, I want to say it's great to be on your show. I watch your show. It's a great show. And I love the fact that a lawyer, an attorney is out there really putting themselves out there to say, here, I'm here. I'm here to help. I'm a human being just like you. So I think that's a really great service that you provide. So kudos to you on that. And I want to say also that I was going to college to be a lawyer. That's what I wanted to be for quite some time. It was either going to be a lawyer or broadcast journalist. And awesome. It just turned out I was broadcast journalism, which we all seek the truth and report it and for our own, for our clients, for our constituency. So we have that in common. How did I become, so people can look at my CV on LinkedIn and that sort of thing. So I won't go over the 47 page that I have there. I was on recently on another podcast and he said, you know, you do so much. So I've won international and national awards in all four areas of assessment, even when it comes to teaching, which is, you know, teaching service, research, and creative endeavor in a university that's ranked in the top 10 in the nation. So that's really wonderful. I have to say that, though, I think that being a military brat, I think, helped me. I was very disciplined. My parents disciplined me where we had, you know, we woke up, you know, before 8, because my dad used to always say the early bird gets the worm, and right? So from a very young age, we were being taught that, and we were taught responsibilities and accountability mm-hmm. in my family. So my father is a brilliant man. He actually went to college when he was 15. He skipped wow. a few classes. He's a math genius. My mother was English and philosophy. She was also an artist, and she was also college educated. And so from a very early age, my mother told us, for 18 years of my life, I guess what I can remember, maybe since I was 2 or 3, that I'm leaving at 18. And she prepared us for the next 15 years. No matter what you're doing, you're getting out of the house at 18. And there were 6 of us. And I think with the 6 of us, I learned so many great things about perseverance, fortitude, believing in yourself from my parents, from my brothers and sisters, and from my extended family and then my friends, but also playing sports. In sports, I learned that you're only as strong as the weakest player, and I use weakest in all with all respect, because where they are weak, we are strong. Where they are strong, we are weak. And so we all have weaknesses. But I think being so young and playing extracurricular activities, you know, being in the military, you had to play sports. You did the President Physical Fitness Award, the Presidential Physical Fitness Award every year. And so we had standards. And I also have to say that from a very, very young age, I was introduced to God and Jesus. I'm a Christian. And I've had conversations more than that. It's about spirituality, where I've had conversations with God since I was probably 3 or 4 years old. And so I just believe my parents, like most parents, especially individuals who are raised in different, in margins, which can be people who are poor, on the lower end of the socioeconomic, people who are brown, black, women, physically special, all those, you're taught that you have to do, and you're conditioned to do better than the next person, even who has all these wonderful things. And so you find a lot of us are overachievers. But I really don't say too much overachievers, because I believe that in my life, in my career, what I found is that people who have a standard here, I overachieve that. To me, they should have raised their standard a little bit. So, but it's all good. You know, I say that with all positivity. I believe in positivity. And just believing, you know, I was always the only girl or the only African-American, Black American, or the only student athlete or the only athlete. And I think that
because peace.
Okay, sure. So besides believing in that God, Jesus, mommy, daddy, and Santa Claus were watching me, and I wanted to always do my very best in that order. Besides that, I was raised a humanitarian. I was raised to do service for the world as a military brat, doing service for this country, and knowing that as far as we can go back, I mean, far, we have served this country in the military in continued service, teachers and nurses and things along those lines. So I've always had, and being the middle child, all of that plays a wonderful role in pushing me to be the best that I could be. And finally, I would say I've just been around great people. I've been around wonderful teachers, wonderful coaches, wonderful friends. I remember I think it was fifth grade, because I moved every year for the first 14 years of my life, basically. So I have to remember when it comes to maybe where I went to school or something. But I remember in fifth or sixth grade, I want to say maybe sixth grade, I had Mrs. Curtin. She was my teacher. And I made my first C. Like, I was pretty much a straight A student till the first 14 years of my life, you know, when I was in school. And I made my first C, and she brought me out into the hall and said, "You're not a C student. I don't want to ever see a C in this class again." And I never made another C in her class. And I was getting that echoed from my mom and my mother and my father and my sisters and my brothers. And so I always had that push. The reason why you're the best that you want to be is not for yourself, is to help other people. So you want to be the best. If you're going to be a doctor, be the best doctor so that you can help people who really need your help. And to be the best is not competing against other people. It's being the best that you can be within your own construct. And so I had that all the time in my life. And so I just continued to do what was given to me and try to do my very, very best in whatever I did. Yeah.
I love that. And some great people. I mean, your parents, are they geniuses?
They're pretty smart.
Gosh.
Yeah, my dad actually, he and his cohorts actually helped save the ROTC program in this nation. My father was a budget analyst, and he came up with a way that ROTC programs can still be in schools. And for going to college when he was 15, he couldn't skip more classes. But he's a country boy from the ocean of Chesapeake Bay. And Eastern Virginia, and his parents were just real chill, and they weren't really sure. And so they stopped at that age. And so daddy, very young age, 15, was going to an HBCU. And my mother, she put herself through college. My mother put herself through secretarial managerial school while she was working full time. And she's been, my mother is the one who taught me about philosophy that I learned as a doctor. And she taught me about statistics, she and my father. So they were pretty smart. My brothers and sisters are pretty smart. Yeah, we were, well, yeah, I'm getting used to it where we're classified, we're gifted. I would say we're gifted.
Classified genius.
But we work hard. We work hard and we believe that God wants everybody to be the best that they can be. He has a special plan for everyone. And so we owe it to the world and to ourselves and to our mothers and fathers and all of our people that came before us of all races and ethnicities who gave their lives for us to go to school and to do the best that we can. We owe it to them to be the best that we can be. And so we
Yeah.
continue to strive for the very best, even though there's no such thing as perfection. We're
True.
perfectly imperfect. And that's
True.
what makes it so awesome. Everybody's imperfectly imperfect, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or perfectly imperfect. Yeah.
I want to kind of ask you a few questions about your book,
Yes.
To 50 Years and Still a Slave, because we are deep into Black History Month here in this country. And there was something you said when you were talking about your background in terms of trying to be the best I could be, and that people should be the best they can be, not by, based on a social construct that has been created, but on your own individual merits. What is the best for you? And so we do know that in this country, there is a high proportion of mental health, all mental health issues, sickness, and all types of issues really stemming from trying to live up to certain social or professional constructs and taking that as being the best. So I want to read a piece from your book, and I want you to expound on that because we don't have time to go through the whole book, but it's chapter 4, The Black American Issue. And really what I want to know is how can African Americans build resilience, their own resilience, intellectually and emotional, to break down these constructs. So a passage that you wrote said, African Americans continue unsuccessfully in most situations to try and assimilate and emulate a particular white construct because, as far as we can see in this country or even parts of the world, there aren't any real positive benefits of being Black. Pragmatically speaking, this inductive form of reasoning is the result of being conditioned by the system. Neither African Americans nor white Americans are taught lessons of Black legacy and African legacy. We know of the white legacy in history, domestic and abroad, because the system that includes the media teaches us this information daily.
Yes. What page are you on?
That is
Stand by.
page 99 to 100.
Okay, I was just getting there. Yes. One of my favorite passages, 99 to 100. Okay, that's chapter 5 in right. Okay. Go.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it is chapter 5, the African American issue. Let's see
Right. Yeah. Okay. And so basically what this country was founded on, see, for the number one target, the number one victim, or the individual or aggregate that's victimized, is are individuals who have issues that are capitalistic in nature, economic. And the reason why I say that is because this nation was founded on capitalism, number one. So there were systems set up that would reward individuals who could get jobs, keep political offices, things along those lines. Okay. That's number one. And now it can be, so that means that women were marginalized. Okay. And so this system was not created to give equal opportunity to women when it comes to that, because women, even when you talk about white women, were not allowed to, I'm going to say allowed because there was power. Their husbands
I
would
know
say,
what
you
you
cannot,
mean.
okay, they could not work outside of the home, even though black women worked outside of the home. They worked in other people's homes and not their homes. So in certain ways, there were a number of women, black women, brown women, of who were in servitude, if you will, because not all the time, most of the time they were not paid. monetarily speaking. And so what that did was it allowed them still not to infiltrate and not be a part of this big, huge system. They couldn't run for political offices. And to me, when you still have, I looked, we dropped down from 62% to 50% of women in this country as a majority. And I don't ask anyone else about why don't we have a woman president yet. I'm asking women. You were the majority, 62%. Why don't we have women as president of the United States? So I look to the empowerment of the individuals where it affects, where it actually comes from. So now if you, this system is exacerbated if there is division among color, if there is a division among race, if there's a division among ethnicity, if there is a division among physically special, sexual orientation, gender. All of that is included. And the reason why I say on one hand, African-Americans, Black Americans, by color and by race, that the system was not designed for us is because it's written. The way that it was designed was not written that every single person, man or woman, rich or poor, Black or white, could have the American dream. It was not written that way. It was not meant to be written that way. So what we have to do is we have to find other ways of diffusing this fuse that blows up things. Instead of coming together, it divides us, which I think is not good for this nation, period. But also we have to find ways of creating our own system. So we have to dismantle certain systems that are not good for the nation and for the country. And that includes Black and brown brothers and sisters. That includes white and white and Asian American and red and yellow and all of that. That includes individuals who do not define themselves as heterosexuals. That includes, cisgender and also non-gendered individuals. So in this country, and I think it's very, very, it's a wonderful opportunity for us, especially during Black History Month, because if we think about Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., one of his first aggregates that he was actually trying to find equality and equity for were the working people, the blue collar, not the white collar, the black or the brown, the blue collar, the people that went out there that I see in the Midwest here in Illinois that go out every single day and get on those farms and get on the plane and they bring up the soybeans and the corn to put food on our table. Is such an essential role, teachers, nurses, that they should be paid what their worth is and what their value is. So African Americans specifically for this month, I think they have to understand that that was only a small part of their lives or their history enslaved, first of all, small. And that's why I think it's important to look outside of America to see where your people came from. I think that adds a bit of information to you because it did for me. And I know it can do it for thousands of people. Other aggregates do it. White people do it when they have the Irish crest on their shoulder and a tattoo and they have that rooted authenticity, but also pride in who their people are. Pre-American indigenous people do it. African-Americans, we're just now catching up to it. And in that, I mean, by as a whole, when they talk about the real Wakanda, and I love the fact that they can go to the movies and dress up in the dashikis. I want it to be more real. I want us to go outside of the theater and understand that, yes, I went over to Africa to when my DNA was connected to the Mende tribe of Sierra Leone and found out a lot about myself that speaks to who I am. It's not just my mother was like this and my father was like this, but who my people are at the root. I was born a leader. I was born to overachieve. Why? Because the Mende women are born leaders spiritually. And so they're giving leadership role positions. So I never see myself as an angry Black woman unless I should be angry. But at the same time, what they call it in Sierra Leone is palabra bundles. Sounds so much better. Where I'm expected to be that. You should expect me to be here. And so that's a way that you can reconstruct. That's a way that active centralized empowerment works because it is breaking free. The rest of the title is breaking free with active centralized empowerment, which means that you are actively centered authentically on who you are. And through self-agency, you empower yourself to move from the margins. You make your own freedom and not that somebody hands it to you. And so you find out that you have a lot more in common. And at the same time, you know, with Cooley's Looking Glass Self, acing it means that if you see me just as a student athlete, and you only think I'm going to be average because I'm a student athlete, what I can tell you is I can turn that around and say, that's the way you see me. But on the back of that mirror, the way I see myself is I have leadership qualities. The way I see myself is I have collaboration and diversity, equity, inclusion on every team I've ever played for since the age of 5. And what I can tell you and teach you a lot about coming together when it comes to diversity, student athletes can do that. What I can tell you that a C with a student athlete that's working is actually a B plus in a lot of ways, because if they didn't have that extra job, they would make higher grades because they have the time. So it allows you to, so it allows to say, you know, the system, that's what it was set up for. It's not working for us. If it was working for us, things will be different 400 years later. But you have to have people who understand how it's not working and what to do about it. But at the same time, we can't wait for reparations. We can't wait for someone to say that we are of value. We have to say we are of value. We're an American. And I came back from Africa knowing what it was to be American, loving it. Black American, loving it. African American, loving it. Three separate things, but also Irish, English, pre-American indigenous people. I don't say Native American because they were here before America. So I say pre-American indigenous people, who many of them had brown and black skin. So when we talk about when some people call Native American, what they're really talking about is not necessarily Indians, as we would say accurately, that come from India. What we're talking about are people usually of Asian descent or African descent, which is another whole question. So
That is so interesting. I love that you were able to find part of your roots. It's something that few sides of my family have been working on for quite a long time, and so I do know that my ancestry is in Nigeria. However, there are pieces of DNA from, of course, Europe, different parts of Europe, Portugal, India, which I was surprised to see India on there. Yeah, I know. It's so interesting, but it's a beautiful thing because it does help you to break down certain constructs when you recognize the type of energy and I'm trying to figure out the best way to explain this, because it's like, it's almost like an aura or an expectation of certain cultures to behave a certain way or to do certain things, the same way that you recognize that you are a born leader, right? And so when I learned that, oh my gosh, part of my heritage is from Nigeria, and that is a pretty good chunk of my DNA, it made so much sense. Most Nigerians that I've ever met are extremely intelligent and overachievers.
Know,
and creatives. But once you find out about who you are based on your bloodline, not your nationality, but your bloodline, it gives you so much more information about who you are, not what people in society have said that you are.
Yeah, you're exact. You're absolutely right. And it's really wonderful to, so, you know, part of my, I was president of African International Documentary Festival Foundation at one time. That's now World Changers, but they're still up and active. They do great work. So that was based out of Abuja, Nigeria. And so I was able to, so a lot of us, even so, it depends on your test. So if you take ancestry.com, it'll tell you more about your ethnicity and the migration. If you take AfricanAncestry.com, it's the only database that will actually connect you to a particular tribe. And so I would recommend that for anybody who's out there, where you actually find that you didn't lose everything crossing the Middle Passage, right? When Dr. Maya Angelou, since I was 12 years old, says, oh, you remind me so much of myself, so much of myself. And she was a friend of the families and of my family. And it turned out a few years before she passed, found out she was Mindy like me. And so you start to notice certain things, certain aspects of, you know, my mother insisted that we have an opinion. My mother had us read the newspaper, watch the news, or he listened to the news every day, Monday through Friday. And then when she came home from work, or when daddy came home, when she was a stay-at-home mom, at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, before we had, either before dinner or after dinner, depends, we would have to report on what we learned. So that gave me, you know, my taste for being opinionated, knowing what I'm talking about by doing my research. I always knew I was going to be a doctor. I said I was going to be a doctor. My mother said my handwriting was atrocious, so I should be, because the signature you can never understand. So I ended up doing that as well, just a little bit. But, you know, what I learned was that there are certain things we say our mother did, or certain things that the way we are, like we love to invite people over. We never meet a stranger. And that you find out is actually how your people are. It's just like Floyd Mayweather says, he doesn't have anything to do with African and Africa. And I'm thinking, I think if you did your test, you'd probably find out that your people were great fighters and they were great warriors or something along those lines. So I tell people, don't be afraid to find out who you are at your root. It's where you're strongest. And I say it's rooted in American. Don't allow that to be swayed. You have every right as an American to be treated a certain way as an American. And so I think that the root is really important to all of that on all aspects. Don't be afraid to say you're a student athlete. Being an athlete is amazing. It's wonderful. Everyone can't do it. And so I say own that. It doesn't make you better than anyone else, but it does make you authentically who you are. And I think that I would say that even when I learned, I'm a Virginian. So my mother's side of the family, as far as we can trace it, are Virginia people. My father's side are Virginia people, one from Richmond, one from the East Coast of Virginia. Lee Daniels was just on Finding Your Roots. That's my cousin on my mother's side. So we have, so I find out Maya Angelou, Coretta Scott King, Martin Luther King, all these other people, John Legend, even Bosnian, Chadwick, he was Mindy. So you find Idris Elba, you find a lot of people. Why do I care about people so much? Why did Dr. Martin Luther King and Coretta Scott King? They're Mindy. Maybe it's in my blood. Maybe it's in my DNA. Maybe it's in my spirit. And so it doesn't have, it really kind of affirms who you are, not necessarily define all the time. Because what I've learned, you are who you are. And you may not be able to attach it here or there, but you're being who you are. And when you come back, I came back more free than ever. I came back thinking, wow. For what I've seen on Bunce Island and all of that, that means someone in my family survived, strong enough to survive. That changed, right? And being a Virginia Black, what we have to understand is not everybody Black American, African American, I'm going to say Black American as well, because Black is beautiful, has beautiful connotations to me. When James Brown came out about Blackness, Aretha Franklin came out about Blackness, when other people were saying Black was so bad, and the Gullah Geechee people I'm also connected to were called Black Gold. And we look at that, the early explorers, what I would say is that there's a high possibility that the reason why I feel I'm an abolitionist at my root for all people is because there were Virginian Blacks that came over before Jamestown and before the Gullah people that were not enslaved. And there's a high probability in my connection with George Washington and Mary Custis and John Custis and Robert E. Lee and all of that, that there's more to us that we can't just say, oh, we're just a color. And it stops there and allow other people to define us. No, we define ourselves and we stand on what we believe in, who we are authentically. And that's for every person. Brown, Black, white, yellow, red, doesn't matter. Every person has value.
Go ahead. Oh, it's all good. This next round is our fast boxing round. And this is going to be really, really fun. The fast boxing round is brought to you guys by the Athletes Making Moves course. I have a question for you. Are you an athlete in business or professional Helping Athletes. I want you to join the Athletes Making Moves course launching this March 21st, 2022, which is helping athletes to find and reshape their identity, understand build business and its building blocks, and begin creating and implementing legacy planning. You can go to bit.ly/AMM course to register, and you will see the link on the screen if you're watching this. Again, if you're listening to this now or at a later date, you can go to bit.ly/course and we'll link that there. So are you ready for the boxing round?
I think I am. So okay. Do I go fast?
Think on your feet.
Okay. All right.
So the first question, athlete in business you wish you personally knew.
One athlete in business that I would personally know, I think is what you asked. So an athlete in business that, oh, I would love to meet LeBron James and Shaquille O'Neal. I met Michael Jordan. He was cute in college as he is now. No offense against his wife. Love ya.
That's funny. Oh my goodness. All right. So name an athlete in your family and their sport besides you.
Name an athlete in my family that inspired me.
Sports. No, name an athlete in your family and their sport besides yourself.
Oh, God. My brother, Clifton, my sister, Sharon, my father, Clifton.
That's good. Okay. What was your brother's sport?
A wrestling.
Oh, okay. If you could do anything and not fail, I feel like this question doesn't even work for you because you've done everything.
Okay.
But if you could do anything and not fail, what would it be?
Save the world.
Oh, okay. That's kind of deep.
Oh, you know what I mean? That's quite a lot about.
Yeah.
You want me to think something? Okay.
Nope. Just leave it there. If you could have dinner with one person, who would it be?
My mother.
Okay. Well, your mom is a very smart person, so.
Thank you. Yeah,
she passed away. Celebrity in my eyes.
Thank you. She passed away in 2002.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, but that's okay. Awesome because I'm actually finishing up a book that she and I wrote together about being positive and rehabilitating from strokes. So be on the lookout for that. Yeah, thank God. Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. May she rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
So my next set of questions, because, you know, something about, look, it's all African-American this month, guys.
So, okay.
Yeah, it is what it is. One thing about our folks is that we don't put emphasis on legal, on how the law can help to support us and boost us to the next level. So I am going to ask you some questions to kind of get your brain going a little bit.
Okay.
But first, I have to let you guys know that this segment was brought to you by the SL DeBarros Law Firm. If you are a business owner, entrepreneur with a service or product, and you deserve or desire to build a lasting legacy and an impact, I want you to come to my free 2-day event taking place the first 2 days in March called 3 Methods to Creating a Legacy by Increasing Protection. You can go to sldebarros.com/events to sign up now. And what I'll do is put the link in the comments for you guys. So Dr. Collins, this is the legal room. What is one thing about the law you love? I want you to think about this. Because I think the African-American community and possibly Latino have such a negative connotation of the law that we never really think about, I actually kind of like that part of it.
I would say that if you get a good lawyer, they can work magic for you, whether it is, I froze?
No, I said miracles almost.
Yes, miracles happen. Yes, because there's your living will and testament. There are things, you know, branding and copywriting your wonderful work. And if you know the law, and you have a lawyer who is a wonderful human being, just like in any business. If you have an individual who knows the law and they know what they're doing, they can You need to have one in every family. Let me just put it that way. I think that is a wonderful thing. And so many people during this pandemic have left us and did not have anything written up and did not have anything legally written up. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons that I would say that's really important that I emphasize. So, and the law works. The law works if you know the law. And yeah, I say the law works with, people behind the law. So corrupt, I don't care what it is, a lawyer or anything, corrupt people create have corrupt systems, but good people have good systems. And we just, and I think that my life has been blessed from working with great people, knowing the system and knowing the legal system and knowing the law. I am not a lawyer and it is a different language. And I think that it would be behoove you to latch on to someone such as the attorney here who really cares about people. I think that's a great characteristic and a quality to have. So you don't feel that it's just lawyering, that you're actually getting a human being who happens to be a lawyer. So I would say, yeah, I would say
Because
that.
it is definitely a relationship, and it is definitely a game. So if you don't know how to play the game, you need to find someone who does.
Absolutely.
Which
I
kind of
couldn't
brings us
agree
back to
more.
that team aspect, right? Like each person plays their position well, you know? Okay, so then my next question for you would be to name three things you wish you'd known about the law. So sometimes hindsight is always 2020.
I wish I knew more of the law when it comes to just everyday things so that I could speak out sooner when I saw injustice or experienced justice. A lot of times people from the margins, Black people, let's just talk Black History Month, we're so used to pushing through suffering and trauma and all of that that we actually don't look at another way and say, you know what, I think this is illegal, what you're doing right now. And I think that if we knew the law, we wouldn't have to go through so much. That's number one. The second thing I would say is how what I wish I knew was about the law. I wish I knew the law more when it comes to reparations. I believe no one, I've done this for over 20 years. When I have speaking engagements, especially during Black History Month, I tell people in the audience who, depending where I am, could be predominantly white, predominantly or mixed, or whatever the case may be, or predominantly Black, raise your hand if you ever want to work for free. And nobody to this day in 20 years ever raised their hand. I said, a lot of you all have quit. Well, imagine, do you want to get paid for free if it's been 400 years? Do you want to get paid 400 years? Do you want to get paid 250 years? And so everybody wants to get paid. That's what we do in America. We pay people for their work. And because of the fact that African Americans, Black Americans have not been paid for the work that they did, I think it's an injustice. And I think that it should be done and it should be rectified quickly so they never have to hear us say it ever again, or at least go to school for free, free school, student loans, 4 years, you get to go for free. The next 4 years, you get paid student loans and get your kids in school.
I tell you one thing, if the Department of Education wants to wipe my student loans clean, I'll take that
Exactly, because that's not, there are people, pre-America, indigenous people that can go to certain schools for free. I think that if you want people to be quiet about reparations, let us, pay our student loans. That's something that can help a lot of people, and not just Black people, but poor people or people who have working moms that can't afford it. It's really expensive in this country.
It is.
And you want to be right. You want to do the things that are up and up, that are on the up and up. And a lot of people, you can't. So I would say that because I would have started that probably 30 years ago, in the legal implications of getting paid for building this country. And I think that until reparations are paid financially in some form or manner, it will never go. It will never cease to be brought up. So that's the second thing I wish I'd known. And the third thing I wish I had known legally, I would say, I think it's good to know legal people.
True.
I think it is a different language.
Connections.
And just even asking things, like as a media expert, I ask certain things. Is it legal to do this? Is it legal to do that? And you can have someone, like I think every organization, like I have an attorney in my nonprofit. So every organization, I think, needs to have a legal voice that can actually help you understand how they're going to see it, or this is what you do, because it saves a lot of headaches. Mm-hmm. So because I wanted to be a lawyer, though, I've always read the legal, like the legal notings and mm-hmm. things along those lines. And when cases are done, I actually read the legal, and being a journalist, I mm-hmm. do the research and that sort of thing. So, but there's a lot about the law that I didn't know. You know, there are a lot of things about the law that I didn't know that I think a lot of people, you know, like I was talking to the individual the other day, and like she took some Tylenol because she had a headache, you know, and it's like I just happened to be reading some things that have been happening on people being pulled over and racially profiled. I said, you know, like even having a Tylenol, like you shouldn't drive, like that's not good. It depends. And just small things that are just really interesting, and how to protect people, right? I think that there should be more. I think we're doing a great job. I think lawyers and citizen journalists are doing it, and just regular citizens are doing a great job. They get on TikTok and YouTube, and they're like, did you know your legal rights? Or on Facebook. I think that's amazing. I love that. I love when the community joins in together. So yes. I think that's about it right now.
Okay.
But I've been very fortunate and very blessed that I haven't needed legal mm-hmm. representation. I'm very fortunate, though, I will say that, because of living on military bases.
Well, you have representation. So that's the misconception we have to change in the community is that we don't need representation ever at all, because we think of it from a criminal perspective sometimes, or something always, you know, bad is happening. But people hire counsel for beautiful moments, for marriage, for buying their first home, to gracefully plan for their legacy and to plan while they're still here, or for your business, you know, so that you can continue
right.
to build and live off the fruits of your labor. And so that the people who you leave behind when God calls you home to glory, they can right. also reap the benefits of that. And so that is definitely my mission, is to change the misconception around the legal profession and law, and whether or not we need representation now or never, just because something ain't happened, to put it lightly. So I want to close with what you desire or want or have been working towards your legacy to be.
My legacy.
Yeah.
I've been building on my legacy. And am I looking here? Am I looking there? I want to make sure I look straight.
Oh, I don't know, but it's
okay. Is my eyes okay? Okay.
Yeah. You're fine.
I want to say that I've thought about this over the past 2 years since the pandemic set in. And I want to think, and I want to say that I think I've been building my legacy for most of my life, but especially in my students. That's number one. But in my life, in first grade, Jennifer Barker was my best friend. I've only met Jennifer Barker and Glenda Wallace one time in my life, and it was for a year. And I still remember their names since first grade. And I remember everyone that was important to me since I was a little girl. And one day on the playground, Jennifer got hit in the eye with one of those metal lunch boxes. And it was really bad. And immediately I ran as fast as I could. And I lifted her up in my arms and I ran all the way to the nurse's office. I have been that way my entire life. I will always lift up the one who needs lifting. I will always try to save the one if I can, and if that is my responsibility, because everyone I cannot save. But if I'm in a position to help someone, I will always do that. I will always do that, and I have always done that. And then, so that's part of my legacy that I've been doing since, 5 years old? And started with the love that I have from my family, again, who lifted me and taught me. Especially my older sister and brother, Sharon and Clifton, and all my best friends. But I will also always pro humanitate. I will always do what's right when it comes to humanity. I would always do what's right with my legacy of teaching people and showing people and supporting people that they're special, and that there's a wonderful plan for them. And there's something special that only they can bring to the world. There are things that I can do, but there are things that I cannot do. And if I can do it, I can't do it as well as you. And then, so I think that everybody has a special calling on their life. And my legacy is to let them know that and to continue to teach them that and show them that and help facilitate that so that our world can become better, more loving, more inclusive, strong and empowering in positive ways. So that has been my life. That I want that to be my legacy, where sometimes it's important to be kind rather than to argue. Sometimes it's important to argue with facts. And sometimes it's always important to support one another as we're trying to live in this diverse world of human beings and animals and environment. So I guess that would be my legacy. More love, more power.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. I want to just thank you so much for dedicating your time to me and to our listeners and viewers for the What Are You Sporting About podcast. I mean, you fully enriched my life. You enriched my life even before when we talked like a while ago. And so I know that you are definitely going to, that legacy is going to stick, seriously.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank
I'm just so excited for all the things that you've done so far and the change that you've made through your own power. We need that. We need that. So again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And guys, listen, if you have not yet subscribed, make sure you go to What Are You Sporting About podcast. You can find it on any channel where you get your podcast, so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to pick up our best-selling copy of What Are You Sporting About. You can check that out at theprosportlawyer.com. Until further ado, I'll check you later. Ciao.
Ciao.
Joining us this week on What Are You Sporting About podcast. Make sure to visit our website, prosportlawyer.com, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite platform is, so you'll never miss a show. And while you're at it, if you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or iHeartRadio. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like the show, you might want to check out our book, What Are You Sporting About? Attorney Savania DeBarros is available for private consulting at sldebarros.com. And remember, we're here to educate, support, and guide you in your journey to success, because we're all sporting about something.